Hi, and welcome to Tall Tales Uncovered. This is Joe Cummings, and I so appreciate you taking the time to listen in. All you new history buffs are most welcome, as are the regular followers. Please share this podcast with your friends, and please do a rating review on Apple or whatever platform you're using. We must keep history alive. I love your comments and questions as I take Tall Tales to new heights. It is so nice for all of us to be sitting out on the deck with this nice, cooler weather. Drinks and snacks are over there on the table, so just help yourself. What's that, Sally? Well, thank you. Thank you for bringing up my book. I have a book coming out in November, folks, called Oklahoma Tall Tales Uncovered, published by History Press. It is chock full of pictures and tall tales. I am quite excited about it. And I will keep you informed as we get closer to November. You all have been the springboard for the Tall Tales, so thank you. Bob, you asked when we came here why we have a town square. Well, not only was there a town square, but it led to an east versus west downtown border war for a tall tale indeed. Let's journey back to 1895 in Enid. The Secretary of the Interior believed that in the formation of the county seat towns in the newly opened Cherokee Outlet, there should be plenty of room for public meetings and government buildings, such as a courthouse. So, he decreed that 4 acres be reserved. In addition, if the town was a land office town, then 5 acres must be reserved. So, Enid started with a 5-acre downtown square with only a land office on it. George Rainey, who made the run and would go on to be the Garfield County Superintendent of Schools from 1904 to 1913 and be Enid's postmaster from 1921 to 1933, plus the author of many books, including The Cherokee Strip, stated, "The 5-acre tract, belonging to everybody and to nobody in particular, was used by anyone disposed to stop there temporarily for about any purpose. It was a general camping place and often presented a varied and motley scene, including a group of angry claim contestants standing, spitting, and cursing the government." Marquis James recalled his father taking him several times to bullfights held in the ring in the Enid Square. By 1895, nearly all the business and shops were on the east side of the square. The bankers and all the wealthy and notable residents lived on the East Hill or Quality Hill, which is a big hill east on Broadway from downtown. They could figuratively and literally look down on the west side. What's that, Jim? Well, Jim, that's a good question. Where was the water? Because water was a very precious item. The oasis of the area was Government Springs. It was a stopping place for Indians and the cattle drive on the Chisholm Trail before the opening of the Cherokee Outlet. It had mineral water and clear spring water, so people, of course, would go to the east side first for free water for their horses. Richard E.P. Messel, 19, came to the Cherokee Outlet run not with a fast horse, but with a pre-assembled building for a bottling company. The run was on Saturday, and the Enid bottling business was open by Tuesday. It was the first business in Enid. He learned his trade at his father's bottling business in Marysville, Kansas. Richard saw the need for water. Who wouldn't pay a nickel for a good drink of water? He bottled his water from Government Springs, which had various springs, each with a different type of mineral water. Richard labeled his water Cherokee Springs Water. He began selling it on Tuesday he opened, and by nightfall, he sold 200 cases, which are 4,800 bottles of water. Wow, he was obviously successful. A very generous movement was started by parties on the east side to fence the downtown square to improve the quality of Enid by stopping the campers and problem makers from using the square. George Rainey stated a subscription was circulated among the businessmen of the east side to raise money for that purpose. The petitioners presented the matter to the county commissioners. The proposal was they would fence off the square at no expense to the county, except for the $50 for the labor required. Euston James, an attorney and father of Marquis James, was chairman of the commissioners. The Ena Daily Wave of July 6, 1895 read, "It is high time that something is done to improve the square. That adjunct of the city, the square, should have never been put there. It would be an injustice to the west side to enclose it entirely, place him in an awkward position to compete. It would be inconvenient to the traveling public. Fence the square by all means, but leave a passage through it." The Ena Daily Wave continued with an article called Guano Park. "It is quite evident to a student of health that something will have to be done about Guano Park. The Wave is always opposed to fencing the square and does not intend to change our course. But something must be done to abate the nuisance, which must be apparent to all who desire to use their eyes and mind. The county commissioners provide a scavenger to clean the square every 2 weeks. The square is set aside for county seat purposes. The commissioners refuse to use it. The homesteaders use it for a corral. Either keep it clean or fence it. We are opposed to a fence." Of course, the east side noted that there was only one business on the west side, as everything was on the east side. The county commissioners approved the building of a high board fence around the square. Getting to the west side of the square would require an extra half-mile walk for any residents, plus a half-mile back. The Ena Daily Wave of September 6, 1895 read, "The Wave is very curious as to what the chick yard fence in the commissioner's office is intended for. Today we solve the problem. It is to keep Captain Charlie Hunter from jumping on Euston James while the board is in session." The war had begun. Edmund France made the run on a September 16, 1893, with 10 wagons of hardware for his business venture. He arrived too late to stake a claim, according to his wife, Grace. Instead, he purchased a lot upon which now rests Security National Bank downtown. He and a friend had to chase off a squatter on his property with their trusty six-shooters. He pitched a tent for his new hardware store opening. Edmund engaged carpenters to erect his hardware store with the frameworks in his wagons. He had five brothers, William, Frank, Mont, Walter, and Orville. All would become very active in Enid businesses, and Frank would be Oklahoma's last territorial governor. They also organized the first baseball team in the Cherokee outlet called the Browns. Edmund's lot became known as the France Corner. He hit upon a genius plan to draw business his way. Water was very scarce. The first thing a man wanted coming into town was water for himself and his horses. George Rainey stated, "Mr. France dug a well on his corner, put a windmill and a tank, and had free water for everybody." This corner became a famous watering place. France's business prospered because of his free water. His hardware store was what the east side had called the only store on the west side of the square. Edmund had just fired the first shot in a war he did not know he had. The east side was furious with Edmund as he was taking business from them. They hastily hatched the plan to build a high fence to block him in and keep their customers on the east side, according to George Rainey. Their actions had nothing to do with helping Enid, as they promoted, but it was really just to stop France. Marquis James remembered hearing, "Edmund France couldn't make money if they gave him the mint." As his wife, Grace France, stated, there was a keen rivalry between the property owners on the east and west side of the square. The east side had settled it. They had handicapped France and literally fenced him in with the legal permission of the county commissioners under the cover of bettering the square. The war was won, or so they thought. Euston James chairman of the commissioners, was a good friend of France and still chairman of that board. It had not occurred to him or anyone else that the generous contribution of the East Side to Fenton Square had a hidden motive other than to keep out campers. He often dropped in France's store just to chat. George Rainey related their next meeting. On James' visit to his store, Mr. France took occasions to state his case and ventured to remark, "This square belongs to the county, doesn't it?" "Yes," said the commissioner. "Well then," said Mr. France, "what right did these parties have to fence it up this way?" "Well," replied the commissioner, "they just assumed the right. Nobody objected, and the thing just went by default." Mr. France inquired, "What would be the attitude of the commissioners if some morning, when they came downtown, they should find the fence knocked down, flat, especially where E Street, which is Broadway, where Broadway is?" "We would be tickled to death," replied James. Frank Hodgson had a grocery store on the east side of Broadway, and trade from the west was cut off to him, as that from the east was from France. So France proposed to him that they tear the fence down. The army of two would meet at 3 o'clock the next morning and launch the attack. France arose the next morning, but it seemed Frank overslept as he did not appear. George Rainey wrote, "France went into his store, wrapped a big gunny sack around a sledgehammer, and stepped out for business. At the first stroke, a 4x4 went into the air and came down with a crash. Hearing a growl, he turned quickly. A big white bulldog seized the gunny sack. He tugged and he tugged. The dog pulled back and he tugged. He went back across the street, pulling the dog. He slipped inside the store, leaving the dog outside. At near daybreak, the dog finally left. France finished the work of tearing down the west side fence. He did such a good job, then he tore down the east side also. The night watchman, Tom Carr, came rushing up, and he asked, 'What in the world do you think you're doing?' France replied, 'Why, I'm knocking down this fence and opening up the street.' 'Grace France,' said Tom, answered, 'I guess you have as much right to knock it down as they had to build it.'" Then Tom went back on his rounds. Tom summed up how everyone felt. Well, the war collapsed along with the fence. Edmund received many congratulations for opening the street, and it stayed open. That's a good question, Bert. What happened to the fence? Well, Edmund built the first good board sidewalk in Enid along the open Broadway from Independence to Grand with the fence. It was literally the uniting of the East and the West on the square. Well, that was a tall tale with a happy ending. Thank all of you for being here today and letting me bend your ear a bit. Please share this podcast with your friends to keep history alive. Don't forget about my book, Oklahoma Tall Tales Uncovered, coming out in November. It'll be something. I so appreciate your listening in. This is Joe Cummings, and I will see you next time on Tall Tales Uncovered.